Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, the co-chairman of the IBM Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the endowment by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Jim Rogan, Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property and Director of the Patent and Trademark Office. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Paul. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being here. And joining us in our conversation is Tom Romeo. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Well, Jim, let's start by some context setting. Could you describe the mission and the activities of the Patent and Trademark Office for us?
It probably is the one area of government that if you stand up at a Kiwanis Club and say, I'm about to talk about my portfolio, you'll see everybody's eyes go into concentric circles. The idea of patents just strikes people as something extremely boring, and yet it is truly one of the great fascinations of the federal government, and indeed of our founders. I marvel at the notion of the founders sitting in Philadelphia crafting a government from scratch, and in the Constitution, which was not a very long document, they stuck in Article 1, Section 8, the contemplation of a patent office, and they did it before they ever put in free speech or free press or free religion. And so the question is why? Why did the founders stick in this obscure area of law? And it was because they understood that this agrarian colony could never grow into a technological and economic powerhouse if they did not build within the very foundation of law that notion of giving incentive for inventors to invent and for creators to create. If you go back in time 150 years ago to Washington, D.C., or even 100 years ago, the top three attractions in Washington, D.C. were the White House, the Capitol, and the United States Patent Office. And the reason was you would get these people come from farms from all over the country. They would visit Washington, and in the old patent office, they had these two-story huge glass windows where the examiners would sit there and examine these new inventions, these newfangled gizmos that people from the farms would come and look at and see what was going to change the quality of their life forever. And it was very much like going to the World's Fair. It was a World's Fair every day for tourists. And so that's the mission of the Patent and Trademark Office. And although we don't have the big glass windows anymore, long before any of you ever see the newest technologies, the latest inventions that are going to improve immeasurably the quality of our lives, we see it first at the Patent and Trademark Office. And so that's really, that is an expression, a modern-day expression of precisely what the founders hoped this office would be.
Well, give us a sense of the size of your team, your agency, and the types of skills of people that are doing this work.
It's huge. We have about 7,000 government employees, full-time government employees, or regular government employees, I should say, and about 4,000 contract employees. So we have about an 11,000-person team. It is probably one of the most technical agencies in government. I like to joke that it's one of the few agencies where you can't put party hacks except in at the top. An entry-level job at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, from a professional standpoint, is a brand new examiner. To be an examiner, entry-level, you have to be either a degreed scientist or a degreed engineer.
Can you tell us a little bit about your role as a director for the Patent and Trademark Office, but also a little bit about the role as Undersecretary for Commerce for Intellectual Property?
Yeah, when I was first nominated for the position, the next day I was taking a jog in my neighborhood, and one of my neighbors that I recognized but didn't really know, I caught him staring out his window at me, and he came running out. And he said, hey, Jim Rogan, you're going to be my boss. I work at the Patent and Trademark Office. And I said, oh, that's great. I hope so if I get confirmed by the Senate. He said, you know, I followed you in your whole career in Congress. I watched you on TV all the time because you were my neighbor. He said, but I didn't know that you were a scientist. I said, well, I'm not. He said, oh, engineer. I said, no. He started looking very befuddled. And I said, look, let me explain to you the way it works in government. If you want to be an entry-level employee, you have to go through the training and experience and the background. And when you get that training and experience and background, we call you an employee. When you have no background, no training and experience, we call you the director. That's the way it works in federal government. My role as director is managing the 11,000 employees of the USPTO, but I also wear a second hat. which is a separate and distinct job. I'm also the president's advisor on all matters of intellectual property, and that's everything from patents, trademarks, copyrights, pharmaceuticals, software, Napster, anything that involves intellectual property is within my portfolio, and that makes it a huge the undersecretary role has significant economic responsibilities because over half of every American export relates to intellectual property. Most people don't know that. I would walk through Congress when I served in Congress and ask some of my colleagues, what's our biggest export? And I would always hear different answers: agriculture, aviation, textiles, and the like. Intellectual property is autos. Intellectual property is greater than all of those combined. And so the economic significance is great.
Can you tell us a little bit about your career prior to joining the Department of Commerce?
Well, as you probably picked up from my initial comments, it didn't involve patent or trademark expertise. I'm a lawyer by profession. I'm a graduate of UC Berkeley undergrad and UCLA Law School. I took a job at a big law firm in LA right out of law school. I didn't have a lot of fun. So I quit and I took a big cut in pay, and I ended up as a gang murder prosecutor in Los Angeles in the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office. I did that for a number of years, and then the governor appointed me to the bench at a pretty young age. I was the youngest judge in the state of California. I think I was only about 6 years out of law school. And I was on the bench for about 4 years, and then one day I came home and turned on the news and saw that my state representative had pled guilty that day to RICO violations and was going to federal prison. And I looked at my wife and I said, gee, that's terrible. I wonder who's going to run to take his place. And 9 weeks later, I was being sworn in. So I ended up in the state legislature. I did a term as majority leader and then was elected to Congress when my congressman of 24 years retired in 1996. I served two terms in Congress. I was beaten for re-election for a third term. I was a Republican representing a mostly fairly significant Democrat district in California, Southern California, in fact representing most of the Hollywood movie studios, who not only ended up voting to impeach Bill Clinton, but I was picked as one of the prosecutors in the Senate trial, which was not good for my longevity as a member of Congress. The poll showed just before I voted to impeach the president, I got a poll that said 75% of the people of my district would never vote for me again if I did. I proved the poll wrong. Only about 60% of them never voted for me again. And so I left Congress in January 2001, and a few months after that, the president asked me to do this job. And I jumped at the chance because the reason I got on the Judiciary Committee in Congress was because I wanted to work on intellectual property matters. Those were the lifeblood not only of my district, but it was truly the lifeblood of the state of California economically at the time. And so I really wanted to work on those matters, and the day after I was put on the committee, the Monica Lewinsky story broke, and so that ended up being a huge distraction and diversion from why I wanted to be on the committee. So the opportunity to serve the president in this capacity in the administration gave me the chance to work on those policy and legal areas that I cared most about in Congress, but didn't get to spend all of my time on. So it's been a good fit for me.
Well, given your different jobs and different roles in the public service, how would you contrast management styles and cultures in the different levels?
Working within any administration is tough for people who have been in elective office. And the reason is, I think it's just very difficult for those of us who have stood before the public and asked for their vote and have given thousands of interviews. We are just organically used to hearing a question and answering it as we see fit. And as a member of the administration, one always has to remember when I'm asked a question, I have to filter it through the prism of remembering they're really asking, what does the president think? And what I think tends to be irrelevant. And so it's like putting back on my lawyer hat in that sense and representing a client. In this particular instance, for me, that has not proved difficult because the president and I are on the same wavelength on these issues, and so it's a privilege for me to be able to serve. But it is different. I mean, as a member of Congress, as a member of the legislature, you pretty much have the freedom and flexibility to say or do what you want, with the understanding, of course, that you live by the sword, you die by the sword. As a member of any administration, one is a team member, and you were there to serve the president, just as when I was a congressman, I had a number of staff that were there to support and serve me. And so that's a culture switch, but when you respect your boss and you think that they're on the right track, it makes it a lot easier.
How about the speed of activity or the pace?
Very slow. That's just the nature of any bureaucracy. I used to think, this is sort of an aside to your question, but maybe you'll find it relevant. I used to always think as a conservative Republican it was a good idea for people from business and the private sector to come into government because it brings that business perspective. And I still think it's a good idea, but I think it's a good idea only if they come and talk to me first. Because what normally will happen is somebody will come from, say, IBM, where you've been very focused on working through certain business principles to achieve an objective, and then one gets into government and one thinks that they can simply transpose those same common sense business-like principles and then bring rationality and sanity to government. And they run headlong into bureaucrats, into bureaucracy, into Congress, into appropriators, into all these various levels that are dealing with your common sense agenda from a purely parochial standpoint. And what normally happens is business people will come into government, see the way it works, and they think it's broke, I have to fix it. And then after banging their head against the wall for a year or two, trying to work from a different paradigm, they usually end up becoming so frustrated that they leave thinking it's so broken it can never be fixed and I don't want to be a part of it anymore. And so I think it's good for Dr. Rogan to sit down with folks like that just for 20 minutes and kind of give them a roadmap of, you know, it's a different paradigm and these are the things that you have to work with. And if you understand that going into it, if you know that it operates, like President Kennedy said, a fudge factory, and then work around that, one has a better chance for success.
It's a good stopping point. We've got to go to a break. Rejoin us in a few minutes as we continue talking with Jim Rogan of PTO. Do you know the difference between patents, trademarks, service marks, and copyrights? We'll ask Jim to explain this when the Business of Government Hour returns.